Kia ora. This program is brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard.
Kia ora koutou. Welcome to the Alcoholics Anonymous meeting on air. My name is David and I'm an alcoholic and I'm the chairperson of today's meeting. We open AA meetings with the Serenity Prayer and I invite you to join in. God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
And this is the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and to help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. Now, kia ora koutou, I'm David, I'm an alcoholic, and with me at this meeting are...
Kia ora, Helen, alcoholic.
Hello, Frankie, alcoholic.
Hi, I'm Nathan, I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, I'm Graham, alcoholic.
Now, I'd like to ask Helen, please, to read How It Works from the Big Book, pages 58 to 60.
How It Works. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program, usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. There are such unfortunates. They are not at fault, they seem to have born that way. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. Their chances are less than average. There are those too who have suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders, but many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. Our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we're like now. If you have decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. At some of these we balked. We thought we could find an easier, softer way, but we could not. With all the earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas and the result was nil until we let go absolutely. Remember that we deal with alcohol, cunning, baffling, and powerful. Without help, it is too much for us. But there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. Half measures availed us nothing. We stood at the turning point. We asked his protection and care with a complete abandon. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. 1. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol and that our lives had become unmanageable. 2. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. 4. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6. We're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7. Humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so may injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Many of us exclaimed, "What an order, I can't go through with it." Don't be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We are not saints. The point is that we are willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles we have set down are guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. Our description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after make clear three pertinent ideas. A, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. B, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. C, that God could and would if he were sought.
Thank you, Helen. Kia ora koutou. I'm David. I'm an alcoholic. I'm the chair of this meeting. You're listening to the AA meeting on air coming from Wellington in New Zealand. Before we ask people to share, I think I might read today's daily reflection for Saturday, May the 31st. And this is readiness to serve others. Our society has concluded that it has but one high mission to carry the AA message to those who don't know there's a way out. That's from the 12 Steps and 12 Traditions, the 12 and 12, page 153. The light to freedom shines bright on my fellow alcoholics as each one of us challenges the other to grow. The steps to self-improvement have small beginnings, but each step builds the ladder out of the pit of despair to new hope. Honesty becomes my tool to unfurl the chains which bound me. A sponsor who is a caring listener can help me to truly hear the message guiding me to freedom. I ask God for the courage to live in such a way that the fellowship may be a testimony to his favour. This mission frees me to share my gifts of wellness through a spirit of readiness to serve others. Now, could we ask... start the sharing and perhaps ask Frankie to share first, please.
Sure thing. Frankie, alcoholic.
Hi, Frankie.
Hi, Frank.
Hi, Frankie.
Really grateful to be here. It's a really great daily reflection. So a little bit of my background. So I'm originally from New Orleans, Louisiana. I grew up around alcohol, and I come from a long line of alcoholics, and I can recall sort of alcohol being a part of the picture almost daily throughout my childhood with family and things of that. And overall, decent childhood, but I did grow up with this experience of sort of feeling different, and I was often reminded of that and often bullied throughout my childhood. And I would later identify that as being queer in my teenage years. And My relationship with my family was not very close growing up. I had a very close relationship with a grandmother who was more of a mom figure to me, and she was really someone that I clung to, and I realized later in life that she truly accepted me for who I was long before I ever got to that point, and I'm very grateful for that relationship. And with my parents and one sister, I always sort of felt outside looking in, and I never really felt a part of. And very early on, I would say one of my first escapisms was always wanting to be somewhere else, never feeling comfortable where I was or the place that I was in. I always wanted to be somewhere else, never in the place that I was in. So that sort of uncomfortableness of that. And I had my first drink around 13 or 14 years old. And for me, it was really off to the races at that point. And from the very beginning, it was escape for me. I never drank for pleasure. I always drank to escape. And that first drink sort of gave me a great relief of all of the things that I was sort of feeling at that time. And then losing my grandmother towards the end of my high school career was really the first time where I buried sort of those feelings, and I never really processed that. And the resentment against my parents and sister really grew and very much fueled my alcohol addiction. And I did my first geographic out of high school, where I moved to St. Louis to be in a relationship that I had no business being in. And that lasted for about a year before moving back to New Orleans. And everything that I was running from was very much still there, still present. I really did not run from anything. And then it was just another year of sort of battling those things that I was trying to run from that were waiting for me. And, you know, through that year, I went through quite a few things. I definitely became a blackout drinker in that year, which was around 19 years old, and putting myself in positions that were not healthy. And then I thought it would be a great idea to do another geographic, and I moved to Chicago at 21. And again, running from everything that I was trying to avoid, and moved to Chicago. I'd never been there a day in my life, packed everything I own and left. And shortly thereafter, found myself in another relationship that I had no business being in, and then just using that individual and getting what I wanted, and then sort of leaving that when I was done with it. And at the tail end of that, my drinking was really sort of off the charts at that point, where I was drinking so much that I was the type, I'm a Leo, and very much every sense of the word of a Leo. So I was the life of the party. I was never sort of a mean drunk. I was the crazy party one that would end up waking up in the bathroom, in the bathtub usually at some point. And that was sort of how my life went. And it was just being the life of the party. And I sucked the energy out of everyone in the room because I demanded so much attention all of the time. And then with drinking led to drugs. And then it was intermixing the two. And from there, everything really spiraled fast. And I very much have a pattern of extremism in my story, where when I drank, I always drank the hardest possible thing, and because I wanted to escape and I wanted to get out of my skin as fast as possible. And that was very much the same with using drugs and things of that, where I just really dove in, and it was all or nothing. And and then I was being pushed by friends to try a meeting. Basically, you don't have to stick around, you don't have to do anything, just give it a try. And so I did that back in Chicago in 2009. I went to my very first meeting. It was a Friday night, and when I walked into that meeting, I had the feeling of, I am not an alcoholic, I'm not a drug addict, and I don't belong here. And the first thing that I did after that meeting was go and drink. And that forever changed my sort of drinking and using sort of ways, having that seed planted of recovery. And so it was another couple of months of back and forth, and I finally sort of gave in, and I had the gift of desperation. And relating back to today's reflection on service and being of service, I can recall in early sobriety where ways to be of service can just be showing up to meetings, no matter how much time that you have. And that was really something I learned, and I had that willingness to do anything to stay sober. And so that first year was very much like holding on for dear life. And I did suggestions that didn't completely make sense to me, but I did them because that's what I was told to do. And like making my bed each and every morning, just simple tasks like that really just kind of re sort of centered me. And I stayed on that journey for 18 months. And through that first time in recovery, I lost my career in creative due to my drinking and using. And that first year, I sort of took a step back and got more of a office kind of job. And through that, through working the steps and sort of getting my life back together, I was petrified to dive back into that field. And it was a manager at the time that sort of pushed me, which led me to moving to Florida to pursue a career position back into what I was trained. And shortly thereafter in Florida, I sort of stopped doing the things that we do here, and I relapsed briefly, and I returned back in the same month, and that was September 29th, 2011, and I've been on that journey ever since. And I'm grateful for that Florida chapter. It was not a place for me, but it allowed me to get my foundation back, and through that I moved to New York. And when I moved to New York, I knew what not to do when I relocate sober, and I immediately jumped into service and being of service and counting myself as a newcomer, even though I had a little bit of time. And, you know, those first 5 years were really slow and steady. And I'm grateful for that because I moved around a bit in early sobriety. And so from there, it really, I was planting my feet in New York, and that was the place I stayed for 13 years. And so after that, those 5 years, my life and the sort of promises that we read in the book really started to sort of shine. And as a result of the work and the action that I've taken, and, you know, the last 10 years have been beyond anything I could have ever imagined. Getting into my first relationship in sobriety, getting engaged in sobriety, getting married, getting divorced in sobriety, and I've stayed sober through all of those things. And, you know, it hasn't always been rainbows and unicorns. I have had challenges, and I've had, you know, have lost a lot of friends to this disease, and I have received sort of medical news that was very hard to sort of process, but I don't pick up and I don't use, and I learn how to utilize the tools that I've acquired over these last 14 years that I know at this point there's nothing that I go through that I need to pick up a drink or a drug. And it hasn't been my thought process in a very long time. I turn to the tools, I turn to friends, I turn to fellows when I'm going through something difficult, or if I'm going through celebration as well. And, you know, through this program, gratitude as well is another big part of my story, where I try my best, not always perfect, but to start my day in gratitude. And I've been on gratitude lists for a very long time. And, you know, again, sobriety has given me a life that I never imagined. When I came into these rooms, my exact thoughts were, my life is over and I'm never going to have fun ever again. And it's truly been the opposite of that, where I was merely living a shell of life that I was meant for. And through action and these steps, I'm now pursuing an opportunity that, again, if you had told me 15 years ago that I would be moving to Wellington, New Zealand to work on a PhD program, all centered around doll play and queer studies, I would have said you were crazy. But that's literally been my life and the opportunities that I get as a result of staying here. So I am very grateful to be here. Thank you.
Thanks, Frankie.
Thanks. Frankie.
Thanks, Frankie. Just out of interest, you might be surprised, this program has a lot of listeners in the United States, so some of your friends from there might be listening into you this morning.
Wonderful.
Kia ora koutou, this is the AA meeting on air coming from Wellington, New Zealand, and if you would like to contact AA, you could try our 0800 number, 0800 AA Works. That's 0800 229-675, and the website is www.alcoholics-anonymous.org.nz. Now, could we now please, Helen, would you like to share, please?
Kia ora, I'm Helen, I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Helen.
Yeah, I can relate to what's already been shared. I always felt as a child that I was not part of my family in a weird sort of way. Even I remember as a young teen looking through my parents' papers, thinking that I was going to find the adoption papers to prove that I wasn't part of my family. I just felt like I wasn't in the right place. I didn't feel comfortable in my skin. And I started drinking round about when I was 14. The first time I drank, I literally drank so much that I couldn't walk, so I became legless, as the saying goes. And it was amazing. I felt like I had found a way for freedom to be, you know, escape from my reality. But that very quickly turned on me, and I found that I couldn't be free of the clutches of alcohol. I drank alcoholically in my teens, and I had some experiences that were, when I was drunk, when I was very vulnerable, that impacted on me. And sort of shaped the way I entered my adulthood. I drank until I was 48 years old. So I drank from 14 to 48. And during those years, I attempted to give up drinking. When I was in my 20s, I had my children, and I had periods of sobriety during my pregnancies. Not all my pregnancies, but I was very blessed that my children weren't affected by my disease and my actions. But when I hit my 30s, that's when I really hit my straps with drinking. I drank alcoholically to escape from reality. I didn't ever drink for the taste. I never drank to be social. I couldn't understand people that would have a drink and leave, or not even finish a drink. That was just baffling to me. I would always finish my drinks. I would drink until I blacked out, and that was the way alcohol worked for me. I really resisted the idea that I was an alcoholic, though, because I didn't drink every day. I didn't drink in the mornings. I could work, but I binge drank, so I could only go a few days before I would have a binge. And once I started drinking, when I decided that I had flicked what I used to call the fuck it switch, I was going to get drunk, and there was no stopping me. And yeah, I had many wake-up calls that should have alerted me to the fact that I should stop drinking. You know, I had injuries. I'd cut my leg open to the bone. I, you know, sprained ankles. I fell over. I had, yeah, lots of incidents that should have made a normal person would think, I shouldn't be doing this. This is dangerous to me and those around me. But I just continued. I railed against the idea of that there was a higher power that could help me. I started going to AA, it's probably in my late 30s, I tried AA, but I just couldn't accept the fact that I had to give my will and my life over to something outside myself. I always felt like that I was in control, I had to be in control, and that I could solve my own problems. But yeah, eventually, I came to the realization that I wasn't going to be able to save myself, and I came back into the rooms when I was 48. My last drink was in Wellington. I went out for a night with a group of people that I had worked with. I'd left the organisation, but I went out drinking with them, and we went out to dinner, and then there were some shots. We drank wine at dinner, and then somebody ordered shots, and this was early in the evening, and then I have absolutely no recollection of what happened. I remember waking up at home. Somehow I'd made it home, and I had to go back through my bank statements and to see where I'd been, which bars I'd been, that I got a taxi home. And yeah, that gave me a real fright. I realised that I needed to stop. So I came into the rooms of AA, and I was willing to go to any lengths, and I did. For me, I just decided that the God of my understanding was going to be the voice in my head that had always been there, that was the voice of reason that I always railed against. And I decided that was my higher power. I'd always had this voice in there thinking, maybe you shouldn't be doing this. Maybe you should, like, this is not the great choice for you. But I'd always drowned it out with drink and my own will. So I also got a sponsor and I did what she said, even if it didn't sound like, you know, it was going to do me any good. It did. I followed the steps, and for 5 years I stuck to the program. For the first year, I did a meeting almost every day just to keep me sober. I did lose the desire to drink, which was amazing. However, after about 5 years in sobriety, I decided that I had outgrown AA, that I no longer needed to go to the meetings, and that I could just have a good life and not drink. After, it didn't take very long for me to realise that I had become, my life had become unmanageable again, but I felt that I could just continue on. So for about 4 years, I've just didn't go to meetings, didn't drink, but my life unraveled in many ways. I did a lot of geographicals with my ex-husband. We moved around a lot. Nothing ever seemed to fit for us. We would try different jobs, different cities, different countries. But yeah, we were never happy. And I moved back to Wellington 2 years ago now, and I decided that, yeah, I needed to come back to AA. I started coming back to AA last year, and it was the best decision I've made. I need to work at the program, otherwise my thinking becomes alcoholic again. I become scattered. I can't focus. And also, I become, as many alcoholics are, it's all about me. My life revolves around if I'm feeling good, if I'm feeling sad, you know, all about how I'm feeling, how I'm doing, what I'm getting out of a relationship, what I'm getting out of a friendship, what I'm getting out of a situation. And I just become totally self-centered. AA has taught me that it is a program of service. I need to be involved in the program. I need to be actively helping other alcoholics and being of service. So joining a home group again, getting the keys and opening up, even speaking today, which I don't want to do. I didn't want to do this. It just reminds me that it's not about me. It's about the collective. The collective of AA keeps me sober. And I want to be there for the alcoholic who walks into the room for the first time, because it's really scary when you walk into AA at first. You feel that everyone's looking at you, that everyone's judging what you're sharing. You know, you have to sort of practice your story and get it right and make it interesting, when that's not what it's about. It's just about collectively supporting each other, doing it day by day and just trying to keep sober. And you quickly realize that we're just a bunch of alcoholics. We've got, we've usually got big egos. We're usually very self-centered. But something about the program brings us together and makes us want to help each other and support each other. I can't talk to somebody who's not an alcoholic about my alcoholic behaviours or feelings because they just don't understand. It's the only people that really get me and really understand how my brain works and how my ego takes over my life are my fellow alcoholics. So I'm just really grateful that God led me back to the program. He led me to there, or she led me to there, in 2015. And the same power led me back to AA. So I would, all I can say is that if you're feeling like alcohol is taking over your life or you could have a better life without it, then, reach out to AA. Thank you.
Thanks,
Helen.
Thank you very much. This is the Alcoholics Anonymous meeting on air coming from Wellington, in New Zealand, of course, and it is 14 minutes to 11 o'clock. Nathan, would you like to share?
Cool, thank you. I'm Nathan. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Nathan.
Hey, so I was a hopeless alcoholic. I was a hopeless drinker. And it's not really based on what I was drinking or how I was drinking or how I was living as a result. I mean, my life was kind of working out. I had a good career. I could actually drink and people didn't know I was drinking. I could drink and do drugs and people wouldn't know. But I think, we all have we all drink in different ways. And I think the thing, for a long time I was asking the question, am I an alcoholic, am I not? I had a mother who was an AA, so I've been around the room since about 19 years old. But so I'd always ask this question and I kind of suspect that I was. But then I went and proved it to myself because I tried to stop drinking and I couldn't stop. And I think that's one of the things we all have in common. At some point we try to stop and a lot of us couldn't. I'm so jealous of those who walked into AA the first time and never picked up a drink again. Mm. I remember going to my first AA meeting and I was in Cambodia. So I'd become a journalist and working in third world countries where the income was relatively good and the booze was really cheap. So I could basically continue to live the lifestyle without work getting in the way. So I went to an AA meeting in Cambodia, and God, I belonged. I knew I was home. It was just listening to the stories. It's like, yep, this is me. But I walked out of there and met some friends of mine at a bar, and I had my new big book with me. And I was so pleased because I knew that I'd never have to drink again. And that maybe lasted a couple of days. And I would drink on the way to meetings. I'd drink to celebrate on the way back from meetings. And it was always, this is going to be my last drink. And that was always what I told myself. And it got worse. And then I went to rehab, came back to New Zealand to go to rehab. And I left there and it was, I've got this, I never have to drink again. And on the way back to Cambodia, what I realized is I didn't have a fear of drinking again. I had this gratitude that I wouldn't have to, but I never had a fear of picking up that next drink. And going back to Cambodia, I still had fears in Cambodia, and I drank at the Kuala Lumpur airport on the way back, and got back, and I tried to stay sober, and it just didn't really work. COVID gave me an excuse to come back to New Zealand, and I was living with my mother and my wife, but I was still sneaking out and drinking, and my big regret for my drinking is I came back and I was going to get sober in New Zealand. And rather than showing my wife, who's from Cambodia, around New Zealand, I would pretend I was looking for jobs and go to the pub all day. And that's the time that I regret the most. It was just so sad and pathetic and lonely. And I was, New Zealand came together to get me sober. August 14, 2021, we went into lockdown. And I was living in a house with people who didn't drink. And I couldn't sneak out to the pub for just one beer. It was impossible. So I had 30 days of enforced sobriety. And, when the lockdown got eased, I was scared that I think it was a level 3 they called it. I was scared that was going to be like level 4 plus with drinking. But I went back to meetings, and I went to my home group, and somehow I stayed sober. And you know, and what happened is all the stuff I'd heard in rehab, all the stuff I'd heard in the rooms that made no sense to me, with some sobriety up, it started to make sense, and it was wonderful. And that went on for a while, and then the craving to drink finally left. And I remember thinking, I don't have that craving to drink anymore, so I guess I can have a drink. And I went and had one, and it was in the work day, and it was in the morning. And I had one beer to see how I'd feel. And I went back, and I felt great. And at lunchtime, I went and had another one. And I just started drinking again. And on the way to work, I would get beers at the supermarket in the morning. And it was only about 10 days, and I was panicking because I was like, I can't stop. I've screwed it. I had my chance, and there's not going to be another lockdown. I'm not going to be able to stop again. And I remember going to see my sponsor, and I left there, and I got, you know, I reconnected with what I needed to do with the steps, with my higher power. And I was driving home, and I thought to myself, I can have one more beer on the way home, and I'll start tomorrow. Mm. And I remember driving, and I stopped and was like, no, I can't. You know, it's going to keep going. And I didn't have that drink. And I don't remember my last drink, but I remember the first drink that I didn't have. And my whole sobriety is based on that drink that I'm not drinking now. It's that drink that keeps me sober. It's the fear that that if I pick up again, my life, you know, I lose all control. Alcohol has no power over me now. If I drink, it's my choice to have that drink. And if I choose to have that drink, then that choice is taken away, and I will have the next one and the next one. And if I can't get sober again, I'm really scared that I won't. I will die. You know, someone once said to me, if someone gave you $1 million, would you have another drink? And I thought about it, and I thought, well, you know, I don't know what I would do, but what they're actually offering me is $1 million to spend the next 2 or 3 years drinking in absolute misery, and I'd blow through that $1 million, and I would die alone and drunk. That's what that $1 million would buy me. So I have this absolute fear of picking up a drink, but I also have this absolute freedom from that fear. Because of that fear, I know that I won't pick up a drink. And, you know, I could leave here today and go for a beer. You know, I can have another drink. I don't have to have another drink. And that for me is the beauty of this program. Look, I'm looking at going back to Cambodia with my wife in a couple of years, and I've been full of fear that I'll go back to my old lifestyle. And with the alcohol, I'm fine, but I've got some other addictions too, and I haven't really got a strong first step against those addictions. And I've been doing some work recently with my sponsor through the steps, and I have this feeling that fear has now left me, and living a life without fear is absolutely wonderful. I mean, I'm scared of all sorts of things, but I can handle them by doing the next right thing. And I think, you know, there's all these things like, I had this absolute fear of public speaking before I got sober, and it was based on my ego that I had to be the greatest public speaker or not do it at all. Since I got sober, filling the time, I've tried stand-up comedy. I've started writing fiction, poetry. I'm doing a master's course. All these things that when I was drinking, I was scared of. I wouldn't even admit to wanting to do these things. And sobriety, and for me, step one is what keeps me sober, that fear of picking up a drink or a drug. I know that if I do, I lose all control. That fear keeps me sober. The other steps for me are about how I live my life, and I have to be sober to live those steps. And the person I am now is so, you know, I love the person I was, even when I was drinking. I don't have a lot of regrets. I don't have a lot of shame. I was always a good person. I had a good heart. I have no real issue with that. But the person I am now is the person I actually want to be. And, you know, some things in my life are objectively shit. You know, I won't go into just how bad some empathetic things are for a man of my age. But they might be shit, but they're so much better than they'd be if I was drinking. They'd be shit plus drunk plus wanted to kill myself. And, you know, the promises, which I think we close up today's meeting with, they're so true for me, and they start coming true. If you're looking at having a perfect life, then they're never going to come true. If you look to compare your life now to when you were drinking, they'll start coming true on day one of sobriety. You know, you've just got to remember that imagine what you're doing now if you were also drunk. That's the difference. It's not compared to, you know, whoever's got the perfect life. It's compared to where you were. And, you know, and the other thing is I started learning the guitar, and every day I get so much better, and every day I'm still completely shit. But it's turning up every day and practicing and doing it. I get better and better every single day. I mean, I'll never be Eddie Van Halen. Well, maybe I will, but I don't think I will. But I don't need to be Eddie Van Halen. I just need to turn up every day and do the work, and it's going to keep getting better for me. Thank you.
Thanks, Nathan.
Thanks, Nathan.
This is the AA, the Alcoholics Anonymous meeting on air in Wellington, and this has been an enjoyable meeting. Thank you, everybody. This has been my first time doing this as a chair on air. Frankie, could you help us close the meeting, please, with reading the promises?
Sure thing. Frankie Alcoholic, the AA promises. If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. We're going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity, and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises? We think not. They're being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if we work for them.
Thanks, Frankie.
Thank you.
And thanks. And kia ora koutou anō. This is just to remind us that we are at the Alcoholics Anonymous meeting on air from Wellington. If you have been inspired or found something of interest or help out at this meeting and you'd like to contact AA, you can try our 0800 phone number, which is 0800 AA Works. That's 0800 229 675. 0800 229 675. And we have a website that is full of an extraordinary amount of information that has the dates and times of meetings every day in the entire Wellington region, or you can go through and find it anywhere in New Zealand. You can find meetings, lots of information about AA, all kinds of material there that can be inspiring and helpful if you're new or thinking of coming to AA, and just for people who are AA members. It's the website's in the process of being remade at the moment too, so there's a lot of new and interesting information going on it. That website address is www.alcoholics-anonymous.org.nz. That's alcoholics-anonymous.org.nz. Now, we are coming up to the time when this meeting on air comes to an end, and we shall close it perhaps a few seconds early with the Serenity Prayer. Thank you, everyone, for being here today.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Thanks, David.
God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
And keep coming back. It works if you work at it.
Yes.
That program was brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard. Thanks New Zealand On Air for funding accessmedia.nz.